Good evening, ladies and gentlemen of the radio audience.
Coming to us out of the sky, the familiar voice of radio brings endless hours of entertainment, information, and cheer.
Today's sound is designed to suit you. Entertainment.
Would you like to hear more?
Oh, may we?
Hey, listen, I have a record I want you to play.
What you got, Holmes?
It is a rare, one-of-a-kind original pressing.
I just want to hear the music, that's all.
Is it too complicated to just keep my records in the category, okay? Just put the rock and roll in with the rock and roll. Put the R&B in with the R&B. I mean, you're not going to put Charlie Parker in with the rock and roll, would you?
What does it all mean?
I don't know. Who is Charlie Parker?
Yes!
Sounds, Visuals, and Music Podcast, with an emphasis on jazz, funk, soul, and hip-hop. Welcome back to another episode of Sounds Visual Radio. My name is Justin, and my guest on the podcast this week is Tennyson Stevens. Tennyson Stevens has had a remarkable career spanning over six decades as a pianist, vocalist, and composer. From beginning his musical journey in Dallas at age four and quickly becoming a dedicated minister of music at his church, his pivotal move to Chicago at 21 launched him into the spotlight as a sought-after session musician. His career highlights include a major association with Natalie Cole, who recorded his composition Party Lights, and he's had studio collaborations with icons like Aretha Franklin, Nancy Wilson, and Maurice White. A testament to his enduring influence, his 1970 track Don't Rip Me Off was later sampled by Souls of Mischief, among others. After four decades of touring the world from his base in Honolulu, Tennyson Stevens now resides in Los Angeles, and at 83, remains creatively vibrant and highly productive. All right, let's jump into our conversation with Tennyson Stevens.
This is going to sound kind of poetic, and I don't mind if it does, because it will drive my point home. I was born in my grandmother's bed in the front of a shotgun house in Dallas, Texas. And I mention that because the bed was right by a window, and there was a big church around the corner from the house, St. John's Baptist Church, that used to amplify the opening music in the church every Sunday morning. And you would hear the organist, Miss Archie, playing on these chimes, a sweet hour of prayer, and then you would hear the organ going, holy, holy, holy. That was where I first heard music. Then fast forward to when I was 3, 4, 5 years old, my grandmother was raising me alone due to some family situations. But when she had to go and work, she would have the neighbor ladies babysit me. It just happened that the lady right across the street from us had a piano in her house. That was the first piano that I ever saw. And to show us that this was truly a gift from God, I was missing from my house one morning. And we lived in a kind of gentle time where nobody locked their doors and the kids ran around and did whatever. And my grandmother was out yelling, my nickname, which I won't tell you, but she was out yelling, where are you? And Mrs. Alexander came to the door and said, Miss Annie, he's over here. My grandmother came over there and I was over there. I know I wasn't able to play a song then because I couldn't have been more than 4 or 5 years old, but I was attracted to that piano. And from that day forth, I have been able to articulate anything that I hear, pretty much I have been able to play. I have that gift. And of course, I wasn't as diligent as I should have been studying because I got kind of lazy because I could always play everything. But that's kind of where the whole thing started. And I, of course, was a church boy. And so I started playing in church. I became a minister of music when I was about, 11 or 12 years old. There was a denomination that we belonged to. And we moved from one location to another. And so we found a church of that same denomination in our new neighborhood. And by that time, people in the area had heard about this little boy who plays the piano. And what did I do? The whole thing. We're sitting in church the first Sunday that we go to this church. And a lady, a member of the choir, came rushing out of the choir room and came over to us and said, is this the little boy who plays the piano? And my grandmother said, yeah. And they said, could he please come and play for the service today because our musician didn't show up and we don't know. Well, of course, I knew all of the songs that they knew because we had been in that church. I became the minister of music that day. And I did that until I was about 16, 17 years old. And of course, me being a spiritual person, I have to say it this way, the enemy came in, the devil came in and said, somebody came and said, oh, you know what? You can make $100 a week playing the piano in this club. Well, that was the beginning of me going and playing in clubs. They would let me in even underage to come in and perform. But of course, shortly after that, I started to drink liquor. And then some years after that, the drug situation came. You know, the stuff that is supposed to go hand in hand with being a quote unquote jazz musician. But I'm finding out now that I was allowed by the Holy Spirit to go out into the world and get all of that experience. And I have done some dastardly things as a result of being in those associations. But while I was out there doing all that stuff, I gained so much wisdom and so much knowledge that when I came back to myself, I am now doing what I was originally intended to do according to the anointing that's placed on my life.
Come on home. And be welcome to stay. Baby, tell me, come on home. Living alone is so lonely. I never should ever have run you away. I knew the day we met, you brought my love alive. You had me so upset, I forgot you were still in charge. So when I took you in, my heart was fooling me. Finally I put you out, cause you only was fooling me. But if you're broke again, and you need a friend, come on home.
I moved to Chicago in 63, and there was a man there named Howard White. He was, of all things, a gynecologist, but he wanted to be in show business. And so he convinced me to let him be my agent as far as recording. At the same time, What brought me to Chicago was, I should have started there. There was a man named Al Williams who was a member of a group called the Four Step Brothers, who were tap dancers from way back in the day, the 30s and 40s. He became my manager. And he walked into a club one night when my sister and I were performing, and he convinced us to move to Chicago. We moved there, and he was getting us all the gigs and stuff that we needed. I met Dr. White, and I signed a recording contract with his little recording company, which never came to too much, but it propelled me to where I was supposed to be. But being in the studio, I began to get record gigs, you know, playing a studio. I became a studio musician. And I ran into Marvin Yancey and Chuck Jackson, who were becoming associated with Natalie Cole. And so I did Everybody's Gotta Love Somebody and Rain, Rain, Rain. And you probably have a list of those things that I did, those singles that never went anywhere, but they got me established and people knew my name, you know, actually around the world. Not a lot of people, but the right people knew it. As I mentioned to you before, I was performing with a lady whom I called my sister because we became just that close. We met in church and we were working in these little clubs in Dallas. And Al Williams came in and discovered us and brought us to Chicago. Her name was Retta, last name Hughes. Eventually, Al got us a contract with Columbia Records, and who they really wanted was Retta. They wanted a female singer to be competition for a singer named Nancy Wilson, whose name you may know. Yeah, if you don't know her name, look her up. She was the black jazz singer of the late 50s and all through the 60s. And they brought us to Chicago to record. I did an album with her called Introducing an Electrifying New Star. And so that was how that's what got us actually started in Chicago. But then being associated with Chuck and Marvin, they came to me and said, we're getting ready to produce this new singer. She was not really new, but they thought she was new, named Natalie Cole. And you have that right gospel touch that we need, and da-da-da-da, and we're going to go in and play. We went in and did Natalie's first album, and that put me really on the map. And since that time, I have been in recording studios all over the world. And, you know, I haven't become a star, but I have played on too many recordings for me to even enumerate.
For a change, if you're coming. Cause I feel like my time ain't long.
From 1969, that's Tennyson Stevens and the voices of the Operation Breadbasket Choir with the song called Hurry Change If You're Coming.
Well, I was never the official musician, but I used to go to that Breadbasket meeting that they had every Saturday that Jesse Jackson was conducting. And I was going in to record that, what is it? Hurry Change was the name of the song. And I had heard in my musical vision, I was imagining this big choir. And as it turned out, there was a choir at Breadbasket. I think there were probably 100 or more people in that choir then. And so I brought a large group of them into the studio. This, again, going back to Dr. White, who was influential in Chicago. So he assisted me in this. And I became pretty good friends with Jesse Jackson. So they readily agreed to have the choir come, you know, because that was publicity for them. So that's the way that happened. The song was called Hurry Change If You Coming. And that song was written from my heart because me being a young, energetic person wanting things to happen right now, right now, right now.
Say you ain't stand for too much longer. Ooh, I got to tell ya, turn to women couldn't be longer. You're not gonna go, no, no. You're gonna stay out here, yeah, yeah. I know something that sure rings true. All the good that I've done for you, where would you be if you lose me?
said no. Where would you hide if I said cry? Where would you be, girl?
Also released in 1969 on Chess Records, Tennyson Stevens with the Northern Soul classic, Where Would You Be?
I was in a relationship with somebody who was not as into the relationship as I was, but I wanted to let them know I am part of the reason that you are able to do some of the things you are because of my presence, because of how wonderful I am. And so that was, I mean, it was so out of order. But yes, where would you be if you lose me? Well, you know, of course, they went their way and I went mine. And that record did whatever it was going to do. But that was the impetus for writing that. That's when I had just really was starting to be called for record dates. And Dr. White was using the Chess Studios. Leonard Chess was alive then. And he was using the Chess Studios, and they came through on one of Dr. White's sessions on me and heard me playing the piano and said, well, let's sign him up. And I didn't actually sign with Chess Records, but we signed a marketing deal with them. So that's how they released that.
Tennyson Stevens with the classic Funk 45, Don't Rip Me Off, released in 1970. Tennyson, talk to me about Don't Rip Me Off.
Don't Rip Me Off came about as a result of the Black Power movement, that whole thing. I was a member of a group called Artists for Freedom. There's a bunch of Black people who were saying, we're going to do what we can to uplift the Black people, da-da-da-da. And the first place that you need to start off is at home, because sad to say, and it's not, we're not the only ones, but I saw so many Black people ripping each other off for the almighty dollar. And my message in there was, how dare you think that we are ever going to come out of this rut that we're in if we keep messing over each other? And I was angry, man, when I wrote that. And so that's how it came about, you know, and I that was from my heart.
Broken man, say I don't love you, would be living a lie. strain to your touch, just to keep my soul alive. So baby, don't you let me go. My heart will be sand to go. I love you and I need you. Yeah, girl, don't you let me go. If you ever really needed me, baby, don't you let me go.
Tennyson, I want to fast forward for a minute to the mid-70s, 1975 specifically. You cut a record alongside guitarist Phil Upchurch, which was called Upchurch and Tennyson. And unfortunately, guitarist Phil Upchurch passed away on December 3rd, 2025. So this seemed like a good opportunity to briefly reflect on your friendship and partnership with Phil Upchurch, who was one of my favorite guitar players. So Tennyson, talk to me about making this record and the great Phil Upchurch.
I had been called a bit of a diva because I was so set in, you know, what I knew I needed to do. Upchurch was known then as the hardest person in the business to work with. I remember Philip, before I met him, I heard a story once about him being in a recording session. And at the time, neither of us could read music. And they came in the studio and put this music in front of Phil. And he, like I said, I don't have the need to read this music. He didn't say it to anybody, but he said, I can fake my way through this. Well, when it came time for him to play, it was a very important guitar for it. And they were waiting for part, and they were waiting for him to play it. And he was silent. And he was so embarrassed that the way that he showed his embarrassment was, he got up and threw the music on the floor and packed up his guitar and walked out of the studio. And I said, wow, I don't ever want to meet this guy. As it turns out, Upchurch and I met each other and fell in love as brothers immediately. And we put a band together called Upchurch and Tennyson. And we began to perform all around everywhere. And Goddard Lieberson, not Goddard Lieberson, you may remember the man who was at Atlantic, but he signed us to that contract.
From the 1975 album Upchurch and Tennyson on Kudu Records, that's a bit of the song Don't I Know You. Tennyson, jumping around to another record that you played on alongside Phil Upchurch, this one from 1973, and it's called The London Bo Diddley Sessions with Bo Diddley on Chess Records. Tell me about this one.
The rub with that, I am getting money from things that I forgot. You must remember, I was a drunk back in those days. And a lot of the stuff that I did has just completely left my memory. But I'm getting money from Bo Diddley. I'm getting money from the jazz one, from all kinds of places back in the day. So anything that you see. And, oh, I became, as I said, I never signed with Chess, but I was kind of unofficially on the Chess label. And those were in the days, Justin, when we would go in to the studio at literally 9 o'clock in the morning and not come out until 10 o'clock at night. And we would be playing on tracks that we didn't sometimes know who the artist was. They would just put the music in front of us or tell us what to play, and we would play. And so I played on a whole bunch of stuff that I didn't even know I was playing on, but they were paying me for it, and I'm still getting royalties from some of it. You know, small as they are, they're still coming in.
Tennyson Stevens playing piano on the song Going Down from the album The London Bo Diddley Sessions. Tennyson, I wanted to briefly talk about a few other credits from your resume. You also appear playing piano on Minnie Riperton's album Love Lives Forever, which was her sixth and final studio album, released posthumously in 1980.
They had done the recording, and her husband, Vicki Rudolph, came to people, musicians who had been close friends with Minnie. And Minnie and I were very close. We shared a birthday, not a birthday, but a couple of days apart. And they came in, Dickie Rudolph called us, and we went into the studio. And it was an eerie thing because they had finished the whole album, and they were dissatisfied. Minnie, before she died, was dissatisfied with it. And we went in, they said, everybody put on your headphones. And when we put on the headphones, the first and only thing that we heard was Minnie's voice. And of course, it was eerie because she had just passed away. And then he came in and let us know that we are going to use the click track from all of those other sessions, but here are the charts for the new stuff. So we did a whole album accompanying Minnie as she sang to us as though she was in the studio.
Tennyson's resume also includes credits on albums by Tyrone Davis, The Emotions, Denise Williams, and Harvey Mason. Tennyson, why don't you let us know what you're up to these days?
I lived in Honolulu for like 45 years almost. I almost feel Hawaiian, and I miss it terribly. But I'm living back in L.A. now to be, you know, have my finger on the pulse of the business. And as I mentioned, I have a studio in my house. And I am now working on a project called Divine Adventure that has so many moving parts. There's a song associated with it, and it's about to have its world premiere. And this is through my church, which is called Christian Cultural Center. It's in New York, and we do a worldwide broadcast. And there's a group there called the Golden Saints, which by definition means that these are elderly people in the church. And since I fit in that group, I am the composer for the group. And each month, the old people do a presentation or a production or something. And so that's going to be a huge blessing because, I'm going to release the song for marketing, and this whole Divine Adventure project is turning into much more than I thought it was going to be. This recording is just the beginning of it, and I'm still in the process of receiving directions, you know, for what I should do. So I'm recording frantically and writing frantically, but there's going to be a Divine Adventure album, and if they still say album. There's going to be, yeah, just watch for it. Divine Adventure is about to make a big noise.
Tennyson, I mentioned earlier in the interview that your music has been sampled in the world of hip hop. Don't Rip Me Off was sampled by the group Souls of Mischief, among others. And I feel like that the title of that song is unfortunately all too poignant, as many artists never receive the compensation that they're owed for their music being sampled. Can you talk to me about your feelings on sampling?
The problem, the fly in the ointment here is the Dr. Flight person that I mentioned to you before is who I was signed to when I did Don't Rip Me Off and some of those other things. But he turned out to be a really unscrupulous person. And he and I came to a real parting of the ways because I had to move further and do better. And he was very angry with me. And also what I'm getting to is in those days, I had no, thanks to Phil Upchurch, I learned about publishing and protecting your product. And Doc White controlled all of my publishing back in the day. And he, you know, he owes me a whole bunch that in his anger, he's decided not to pay me. And I have no proof. You know, of those things, all that. I probably have some proof because I'm the composer, but I just decided not to even pursue it. You know, it's not even worth it. But as far as my stuff being sampled, I always praise God for any way I can, you know, yeah, be of service. And so if that's what that's being used as, so be it. Because I'm going to get what I'm supposed to get, nonetheless. When Retta and I first got in the business, we were looking to stay relevant in the quote-unquote jazz business. And so we went out and bought records of the, you know, our favorite people. We happened upon a group called Lambert, Hendrix, and Ross. Please remember this name. Lambert, Hendrix, and Ross. They were a jazz vocal trio. And they would take the songs, there was a song that, a lot of Count Basie big band things. They would take those arrangements and write lyrics to them. I believe with every fiber of my being, Justin, that is the advent of hip hop and rap, because they would take those horn solos and put these incredible lyrics to them that were almost unsingable. I mean, the lyrics that you blew, it would have came so fast. That, I think, is what turned into rap, that turned into hip-hop, that turned into all of this stuff now, you know, that we're hearing today. And I noticed, I can't remember which song it was that I recorded, but there was some song that a rapper, and I mentioned this only for reference, a white rapper who came out about 5 years ago, 6 years ago, I'm trying to think of his name, and there aren't that many white rappers after Eminem, but he used something from one of my recordings, and it was just a whoa, a woo, or something, but it was distinctively mine. And he used it, and I don't even know if I ever listened to it, because in those days, I was so anti-rap and all of that. Thank God I've grown up.
Tennyson Stevens with me on Sounds Visual Radio. Tennyson, it was really nice to talk with you today, man. Thank you so much for your time.
Justin, please let me say, and not just because I'm involved, but I praise God for what you are doing, man, is so necessary, you know. So keep doing what you're doing. Be encouraged in what you're doing, man, because you are doing a good work. I'm telling you, I promise you.
All right, man, all the best.
You too, sir.
Sounds Visual Radio is a production of Sounds Visual Media. All past episodes can be found in the archive at soundsvisualradio.com. Follow the show on Instagram and Facebook at Sounds Visual Media. You can also email the show at soundsvisualradio@gmail.com.